Hello, and welcome to the Gifted Life Podcast, where we have conversations about organ, tissue, and eye donation and transplantation. You can always find us at thegiftedlife.org. Tell your friends. I'm Lori Steele.
I'm Joey Boudreau.
And I'm Nyla Schwab.
Coming up on this episode today.
If you get 7 organs transplanted and die 5 times and still live to tell about it, does that constitute being a miracle man?
Yes.
Yes.
We'll be hearing more about it.
Wow. I have lots of questions.
I have so many questions. I'm so curious. Like, how does that even happen? So, yeah. And then we're going to talk a little more on curiosity.
All right. All that and more right here on The Gifted Life. Hang on to your hats. Welcome back to the Gifted Life Podcast, guys. We want to introduce you to our newest friends here on The Gifted Life. We have Todd Hensel. Hey, Todd.
Hi.
And we have Miss Carrie Meehan. Hey, Carrie.
Hi there.
We consider you family now, guys, Todd and Carrie.
Oh, I love
and
it.
We were preparing for this interview today, and Nyla, I think you mentioned this. We had to reread this multiple times before it sunk in. So I might have to do that for you guys at home. But listen to this. Todd received a 7 organ transplant. Todd received a 7 organ transplant. This was 16 years ago. The surgery took 2 days. And during that experience, he died how many times, Nyla?
5.
5 times. That's a lot.
That's
a lot. So incredible story. And Carrie put it in a book, which is available on Amazon. It's titled My Miracle Man, which is pretty awesome. So we pulled that up. Very easy, very accessible. But it got us all talking, and we have so many questions, guys. So thanks for joining us here on The Gifted Life. And I guess, Carrie, we'll start with you. You know, we're talking because you said, this is such an incredible story. We got to tell more people about it. Let's do a book.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about that.
Okay. Thank you. It's a story of miracles, but I believe miracles are real to me. I, as I say in the preface, I don't just believe in them. I actually rely upon them. And Todd's story is miraculous because it drives home the power of free will, the power of our mind, the presence of the divine, and what's possible. He'll describe it more when he gets into a state where he just went to childlike faith and surrendered. But I want it to be inspirational so that people know what's possible. And we also both really wanted to raise awareness of the importance of organ donation and raise signatures. So.
Yeah. And then, so there's a love story in there. I'm loving the pictures from high school when you guys were in high school. So you got to check that out. And then, you know, we all go through hard times and it's getting to the other side of it through faith, through support, through amazing things, miracles. And then it prompts conversation. So it's just a wonderful work of art, really. It's called My Miracle Man, The Deaths and Life of a 7 Organ Transplant Recipient. So we kind of want to get into that, huh, Joe?
You know, when I first read it, honestly, I was like, well, you know, every once in a while we have a 7 organ donor here. It's not often. And then I had to reread it a couple times. So that struck me and I was like, oh my goodness. So Todd, so can you take us a little bit, you know, into one, have you ever heard and thought about organ donation and transplant? Two, what struck you, like, how did you find out about the fact that you needed an organ, one organ transplant, much less 7, and you know, what prefaced that, and you know, what entailed after that?
Well, I have heard of organ donation before, and you know, also donating blood, so I was active in that, and then it just you know, it happened so quick, or I clotted out. And initially in Detroit, they did not have the education yet to do multivisceral. So immediately I was just placed in hospice. And so I looked pretty grim right from the start. And, you know, by chance, a doctor from Indiana University was up in Detroit to pass on some knowledge and, you know, heard my son's anguish as he was on the floor with because the doctors had just told him I'll probably make it 2 days. And this doctor walked in his room and said, you know, we have a chance if we can get him to Indiana University. And so that's my son went to work, and being in hospice, I was denied any life flight. But we, my son found a bush pilot that delivered me down to Indiana University.
And let me take back a step here. So of course, your hepatic, or either your vein or your portal vein or your hip, one of your vessels to your liver clotted, right?
Correct. Yep.
And then that precipitated other organs failing, as I understand?
Correct. It was, being a plumber, I don't know all the veins or portal veins, but my main vein that feeds the organs, all your organs, had multiple blood clots in it. I drank like a third of an energy drink, and I was doing cycling classes. It just happened I was in like the best shape of my life, probably overdoing it on the workout end of it. So now I kind of preach everything in moderation. But that's when I threw the blood clot, and, you know, basically all my organs died overnight.
So you felt it immediate. I mean, and the funny thing is the irony in it. You know, I love exercise. Exercising is my, like, that's my therapy. And here you are doing something to improve your health, and all of a sudden it puts you in a situation where now you're in hospice. So you mentioned the organs, and we kind of touched on it off air, but if you can tell the listeners, so specifically which organs were you now in need of a transplant?
I needed a new stomach, small intestine, liver, kidney, pancreas, spleen, large intestine.
That is incredible.
Did you receive two kidneys?
I just received one, and they had cut my dead ones out in such a way that they think there's a possibility that they may be regenerating themselves a little bit.
That's so incredible. And here's the other piece for the listeners. Like, so we do sometimes we're able to recover what we call multivisceral. And that's what happened in this situation. You know, oftentimes those are for kids. Like, you don't usually have adults that are getting transplanted, like what we say multivisceral. So the stomach, the pancreas, the liver, intestines. And for you to need a multivisceral transplant and get it is a miracle. I know you guys touched on the miracle. Is a miracle in itself, like just that piece. So can you tell us a little bit, you know, so if you can go to, you know, the part about you finding out you needed a transplant, and then you touched on the Michigan piece, or the fact that they didn't do multivisceral or multi-organ transplants there. So walk us through, if you can, you know, what happened from you saying, okay, I'm going to be on hospice. And then through your son, you know, you fortuitously meeting someone that, you know, again, another miracle that provided another opportunity.
Once Josh heard that I needed to get to Indiana, they put a call out to the airlines and different venues. A man volunteered, and we had to pay him a little money for gas. He picked me up. He was a bush pilot. He dropped me off in, you know, in Indiana. So I went from, it was like, once I got to Indiana, they opened me up, did what they could, put some portals in me, a bunch of IVs. And I went like 75 days with no organs. And so there was a lot of pain, a lot of misery on my part. It was very hard on the nursing staff, and I was able to, you know, I believe it was the divine involved in keeping me in a mental state to keep my body functioning and my brain as well from not succumbing to shock or anything else, you know, making me crazy. And it was that down to the last week, they'd woke me up and asked me, you know, you're starting to go septic. We don't have anybody yet for you. You know, could you pick a day that you would like to be unplugged? And I picked a Thursday, and was kind of in anticipation of that. And they woke me up the Wednesday before, and they ran some labs. And in the morning, the labs weren't good. I was still septic, and it didn't look very hopeful. And I asked that they just leave me awake, and they did. And that's within, you know, I was very humble, and I felt the presence of the divine in my room. And we had a like a brief conversation, and he basically told me, on your worst days of pain through this, just think about your Savior on the cross, and he will help you through these days. And that's what I did. When they came back in that night, the doctors felt a change in the room, like in the energy. And they asked the nurses, like, who did somebody give him something? And they all said no. They ran another set of labs, and I had cleared up enough where I was back on the list. And it was like later that night, they came in and told me, we have got a donor for you. And in my heart, I knew from that point on that I was going to make it. I knew I had a lot of tough days ahead of me, but I knew I just had that you know, gut feeling that I was going to make it through this.
Todd, this is such a
heavy.
It's, yes, yeah. I think my insides are flipping around and my heart's accelerating. So were you, like you said, you were awake, or you asked them to keep you awake. Did you have people there with you? I mean, what were you thinking through all of this to have to pick a day to have them, like you said, I guess, unplug?
Yeah, I was awake, and I picked a day, and I just thought, you know, I didn't want to go on a weekend, didn't want to ruin anybody's weekend. And I know I'm a blue collar guy, so I just was very humble. And I went down to like, it was really simple. Once I got there, after all that pain, I just had childlike faith. And you see it in young kids, and they speak to God and their presence. And you know, here I was a kind of stubborn old guy at 48, and I just when I just asked for his help, he showed up and was there, like, holding my hand through this walk.
Gosh.
And here to share the testimony, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened without Miss Carrie. So I want to weave you back into the story. I see that you and Todd, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is my gist. You guys went to high school together. That was back in 1976. You're a stunner, obviously highly intelligent, and you you traveled and lived your life and were doing amazing things. And then in 2008, I think you were in Ireland, from what I remember reading, you hear about Todd. And then how do you get back in?
Yeah, great question. So my best friend from childhood, who was still in Michigan, remained in touch with Todd, probably primarily used his plumbing services because he was a master plumber. And I remember I was living in Ireland, and she reached out to me and said, Todd needs prayers. I don't know what's wrong, but he's fighting for his life, and it's very rare. So I remember where I was sitting, you know, these pivotal moments in your life when things come to you. Yeah. I literally can remember where I was sitting at my desk, and I looked outside at this stone barn across the way, and I said a prayer. And you know, Todd was my first love, and you just never forget your first love. Aww. And so though we didn't have any contact for 40 years, wow, that was in 2008, and I said that prayer, and then obviously he made it, and I wasn't back in his life until 2016, when I, you know, I left Michigan in 89, and I never really had plans to go back. But in a strange series of coincidences, I found my way back there because my son ended up going to a arts boarding school in northern Michigan. So in 16, I was back there. And Todd reached out to me because He was having some challenges with sleeping because when someone crosses over, part of my world had been working with a psychic medium in Ireland, and Todd had some psychic experiences that he knew were a gift, but wanted to sort of assert some control so that they weren't waking him up at night, and that was kind of what I was involved in. So he sent me a message, and we ended up meeting for coffee the next week, and this was in July of 16, and I'll never forget it. See him walking across the parking lot towards me, and I thought I knew what the rest of my life was going to look like. And then I saw him walking, and I just thought, oh my gosh, God has a different plan for me. So I made a promise to help him come to terms with his gifts and use them in a high way where he was in control of them. And then we fell in love.
I was waiting for that part, Carrie. I love it. Okay, yeah. So this incredible love story. You guys reconnect. Like, it should be a movie now. So
I'm thinking, is this all in the book?
Thank you.
Is this?
I think so too.
That's probably next. And so how do you get to, let's write a book. Like, how do you get there? Like, I'm so glad that you did, because we would have not known his story. So how do you start working on that? What's that process like? Are you an author in that field?
Everywhere we went, we've done several things to promote organ donation. And when people would hear that I'm a 7, everybody just kept saying, gosh, you should write a book. You should write a book. And, you know, I know myself very well and who I am. I'm really good with my hands, and I'm a problem solver. One thing I am not is a book writer. So Carrie kept hearing all this. She was accompanying me, and she finally said, you know what? I think I'm going to write this book, you know?
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, so I just started taking notes. And, you know, I mean, this is a man who was told he probably wouldn't walk again because he was in a wheelchair. Everything had atrophied. You know, so the miracle of it and the strength of his will, I really feel like we're all here to tell our stories and inspire each other to walk each other home, to quote one of my favorite people, Ram Dass. And so I just started taking notes. And then, you know, his dream had been to be a cattle rancher. So we're in Michigan, and we were looking at what's next. And then we found ourselves down here, and that's exactly what he's doing, is cattle ranching. And I work in hospice, and he's one of my star volunteers with patients, because who better to help people in hospice than someone who was there?
Yeah. So,
you know, I wrote the story, but it took a very long time, again, just because of all the different facets to it. But in 18, when we first had moved down here, a good friend of ours in Michigan, Kyle Bailey, who since has passed, bless him, was a 4-organ recipient. And he was on a mission to raise awareness and raise signatures by 500,000. So he had planned to make a bike trip from Michigan to Florida. Todd has always been active in kind of coaching pre and post transplant patients over how to get through it. And so he saw that Kyle had put a message on social media that he lost his driver, that the driver, his friend who was to follow him in an RV, suddenly could not, and he needed a driver. So we had just moved to Tennessee. It was like second week, and I walk out, and we've got boxes all around, and Todd's having coffee, and he said, I think we need to do this. I think if I accompanied Kyle, you know, I would really help his cause. So we found ourselves in spring of 18 doing that trip. And it really, really, it was very significant to us. We most importantly helped Kyle to achieve his goal. And we learned a lot along the way about OPOs and how it all works and the need for greater communication between them all and just everything. So it's been an interesting journey, but that's been the thread through all of it. So,
wow.
So I'm curious about Dr. Vianna. So you say his name? He shows up in the hospital. He hears your son crying or upset, Todd, and was he involved in the surgery, or did he just connect you? What?
Yeah, Dr. Vianna was actually the lead doctor, and he had dreamed, like, of doing the surgery, in his mind, he's like, I know I can do this. It had never been done on a person of my age. And he was kind of like waiting for the opportunity. And I show up, and for a 48-year-old person, and we had my insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield, trying to knock me off, saying, but I had a clean heart. Everything was like, I passed all their tests. Mm-hmm. And he came to me and said, Todd, he goes, I know we can do this. I need one promise from you, that you never give up. And he, you know, he held my hand, was touching my face, and I winked at him. I said, Doc, I'm not a quitter. I won't give up. And he goes, good, let's do this. And
I did it.
So he did a
wow.
Yeah, he did it. He did a remarkable job. And I've been a case study for 10 years, where I'd go in and let him probe and poke me and look inside. And finally, after 10 years, he said, you know, Todd, you've served mankind very well. I think you shouldn't do any more of these. It's too hard on you now. Nice. So I'm glad to hear that. And much happier being a rancher.
They hadn't seen each other in years. But then January of last year, Todd and I were down in Florida. And so we got to sit with him and spend an afternoon talking. And it was extraordinary. I feel like these two men had a soul agreement and with each other, and they were just extraordinary. And I really want to say that he had to do a lot of fighting and advocating himself to make this happen.
Sure.
And he was a young man. He was only 38 at the time. So
that is certainly, Todd, that is certainly a testament to your faith and perseverance and ability to overcome. And you know, I'm one who truly believes that you give someone your word, you stick to it. Never give up is certainly something that you showed in spades to Dr. Vienna.
Thank you.
How are you? I mean, obviously that you are the test case, and you've passed all the tests with the poking and prodding and blood work and all that. So tell us, so how's your life? Obviously you're a cattle rancher and you're doing things that you want to do.
I do. My life is, I enjoy it very much, and I do something positive every day. I improve something, my farm, nature, cattle. I have a calling for that because I am so grateful for my gifts. My day starts out where I take my anti-rejection meds and having so many organs. Sometimes I have to sit still for an hour or two and kind of let the dizziness wear off of me, but then I'm off and going. But you know, with cattle, I can work at my own pace, and that's my key, is that I probably can't function like I used to, but I still can get out there and do the chores that are needed to keep my small ranch going, you know. So I'm grateful for that. I'm one of them guys that have to feel productive every day, and I'm still able to achieve that. And I've parked in handicapped spots, and people look at me like, what are you doing there? You know? So I look very normal and very healthy.
Do you, on the inside, how do you feel? Because you've got a lot of new parts.
Yeah, that took me a long time to get used to, because I had given up pizza and, you know, boudin and all that good stuff.
Oh, can't give up boudin. Not the boudin.
I know. And I was eating very healthy at 48, and all of a sudden I had all these cravings for teenage food again.
Yeah.
And they were telling me eat away, gain weight. So
we're curious.
Well, donor was 18.
Okay, so we were curious if y'all had any connection with the donor family. Or you know anything about your hero?
I do not, and have not had any connection. And of course, you can write a letter, but
and he has,
and I have, and I haven't heard a response. So. Just still grateful, though. Very grateful.
We did ask the OPO in Indiana to send the donor's family a copy of the book because, of course, it's credited to them. So hopefully, but we he may never hear, but that's okay.
Yes. And yeah, I think it's beautiful that y'all are reaching out and you're trying, and that is in your control. That's what you can do, your part. And I think for other families that say yes and they never get to hear from their loved ones' recipients, it's beautiful to see that you are taking care of your gifts. You're moving that forward in honor of
your
donor.
Look what you made happen.
Yeah.
Honoring your donor.
And
incredible.
Being humble. So thank you for doing that, not only for your donor family, but for all the families and all the individuals that say yes to donation. Because we have a lot of people that may say yes to donation, but maybe we can't move forward with donation.
Well, it's been so important to me. My children were young. I've been able to see them graduate high school and college, and hopefully someday I'll see grandchildren.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's the other book, Carrie. You have to write that one. All right, so the book's on Amazon. I'm so grateful for it. What a lesson for all of us in a lot of life's aspects. So My Miracle Man, The Deaths and the Life of a 7-Organ Transplant Recipient. Very easy to find there on Amazon. Get your copy today. Thanks for just starting the conversation about donation and asking people to learn about it, to be educated on it, and to hopefully say yes to organ, tissue, and eye donation. Thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for letting us learn from you guys today. Hey guys, here on The Gifted Life, we take a moment for mental health.
Yeah, Lori, and we're always curious to know what is Nyla going to talk about today?
That's how we learn, though.
I know, but Lori, Joey, I'm always curious too. So
ask lots of questions.
Our guest today, so amazing.
Right.
And there's a quote by Eleanor Roosevelt, "Life must be lived and curiosity kept alive. One must never, for whatever reason, turn his back on life." And I feel like that story, there is curiosity around every turn of the life.
Yeah.
I mean, when he found out his diagnosis in the hospital, the doctor who sees the son who's upset and he's curious to why the son, he approaches him and the son tells him, and then they have to figure out, like, how can we make this work? I mean, I believe curiosity moves us forward in life. And it's hard to be curious when we're always like in our own thoughts. And so I think that being curious about everything around us gives us meaning, it gives us opportunity, and it certainly gives us direction.
I think it sparks our learning. I mean, honestly, because a lot of times
that's why I got to follow up. I have one more question.
I
just got to understand a little bit better.
Yeah. And you mentioned being like in your own thoughts. A lot of times I'm intentional about trying to be in my own thoughts sometimes, but then there's the downfall, is that, like you mentioned, I may be missing those curiosity points that I could have really started learning something. So
I don't feel like I can fully form an opinion on something because I don't feel like I've asked all the questions, and it's never ending. Like, it could be never ending. Like, I'm always going to learn more, and I may pivot as I learn.
And listening to this, there's a lot of spiritual discussion around this, and I find that when I'm talking to especially mothers who have lost a child, there's a lot of searching for answers, curiosity, wanting to know where their child, are they safe, are they okay. And so they don't stop at just what they know. They go beyond that. And I think that guides them along their grief journey. And I think grief is a lot about curiosity. But, I mean, his is the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. I mean, this gentleman, Todd, was curious about, like, how do I move forward and keep living? And then how amazing that he got involved trying to raise awareness. And the writing the book, I mean, so many things came out of just being open to, like, what's next.
And then being teamed with someone that you hadn't talked to in 40 years to tell your story.
Oh, they had to be curious about each other, right?
Yeah. All right, so, and I got to bring this up. So I always heard, like, curiosity killed the cat.
Yes.
Remember, and it's like, unnecessary investigation or, I know.
I mean, it kills them, but they have another eight lives.
Yes, they got plenty to.
So it says, explore. So when I looked it up, it says implies that being curious can sometimes lead to danger or misfortune. I feel like that's like old school.
That is old school, right?
Maybe so. I mean, you could say it's more about balance. I mean, everything's kind of comes down to balance.
The Nyla turn. What would Nyla say? This is what Nyla said.
Yeah. I mean, there's a balance because you can't always be curious. Sometimes you have to stop and just smell the roses. So if you want to go back and forth, because Todd talked a lot about gratitude. So there's a lot. True. Yeah.
I have lots of questions, follow-up questions.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
One right here. Maybe you have a topic you'd like for us to cover here on The Gifted Life. We'd love to hear from you. Our email is info@thegiftedlife.org.
In every episode of The Gifted Life, we honor a hero. Today's hero is Eleanor Bergeron.
And we learn about her from her family. Eleanor Ella Claire Bergeron was born on December 27, 2022. From the moment she entered this world, Ella's radiant spirit brought boundless joy and warmth to everyone fortunate enough to know her. Her infectious laughter and gentle soul had a remarkable way of brightening even the darkest of days. Tragically, on April 1, 2023, Ella was called away from us far too soon. Yet, amidst our grief, her legacy of love and kindness endures. Through the selfless act of organ donation, Ella continues to shine brightly, offering hope and healing to others in need. The process of donation, guided by the compassionate care of the Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency, or LOPA, transformed our sorrow into a beacon of light. Each step, though bittersweet, was marked by a profound sense of purpose and gratitude. Ella's gift of life has not only honored her memory, but has also brought solace and renewal to those who have received her precious gift. For us, organ donation has been a testament to the enduring power of love and the remarkable capacity for healing that resides within us all. Though Ella may no longer walk beside us, her spirit lives on, embodied in the lives she has touched and the hope she has bestowed upon others. In sharing her story, we hope to inspire others to consider the profound impact of organ donation and the enduring legacy of love it leaves behind. Ella's family also sent us pictures. You can view them at LOPA.org on our Heroes page.
And now we pause and say thank you to Ella for the gift of life.
That is going to do it for episode 249 of The Gifted Life. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, you can register as an organ, eye, and tissue donor anytime. Registerme.org. The best place to find us, tell your friends, is at our website, thegiftedlife.org.
Yeah, wow. Special thanks to Todd and Carrie for coming on, sharing their story. Of course, a love story.
That
had a
40-year
gap, but beautiful love story.
It's like Hallmark.
And truly a story of miracles. I mean, someone who's received 7 organs transplanted and who died 5 times and is here to tell about it, but is also here to pay it forward.
Yeah.
For what they're doing for the donation process.
How you get from hospice to a different state that you never even knew to have a surgery that was happening that could, save your life.
I mean, how are you a hospice volunteer patient who is also a patient, years later? That's a miracle in and of itself.
Oh, my gosh. So great. You heard that story right here on The Gifted Life. Tell your friends, guys. The best place to find all of our podcasts will be thegiftedlife.org.
Listen there and find links to listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a 5-star rating. It really helps others find us.
And on social media, please like our page on Facebook, The Gifted Life Podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram at Gifted Life Pod. Thanks for spending some time with us here on The Gifted Life. Our ask is that you go out and do something you wouldn't normally do to help us make life happen. We're one big team. Until next time. This is a production of the Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency, or LOPA. The Gifted Life is hosted by Lori Steele, Joey Boudreau, and Nyla Schwab. Producer is Shalon Caraway. And we are recorded, engineered, and mixed in our Covington, Louisiana studio by Troy Perez.